Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the IGN UK podcast.
Now,
my name is Gav Murphy.
I was going to say now, not in video.
Now, not in video. Yeah, we're not doing this on video anymore because nobody watched it, really. And we can put a lot more effort into the audio version by doing stuff like this. Right, Dale, when I say this, make our voice, like, go round the room.
Yeah.
Right? Like we're in, like, a big orchestra pit,
fly,
okay?
Between each side of the headphones.
He's literally shaking his head.
Okay, ready, Dale? Ready, Dale?
Nah.
This.
Sounded like a dying dog.
Good job, Dale.
It's like the BBC Radiophonic Workshop in Dale's head.
Yeah. Look at all these audio jokes we're now pumping out. Yeah. This is what we were missing out on when we were a video medium.
Yeah, so we've got Joe Scrubbles.
Hello.
And Alicia Judge.
Hello.
Coming in.
Coming in?
All right.
You said that as if we have a guest.
Yeah.
Coming in.
Coming in. We've got an email from Darren Gutteridge. So, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Wait, do we genuinely? That's what? A good... Darren Gutteridge.
That is his name,
I enjoy
yeah.
that name.
Sounds Dickensian.
It does.
That's coming up later in the show.
Yeah. So you've just been to America and all their podcasts do a thing where they announce everything they're going to talk about at the top of the show.
Because everything they do is so, like, professional.
I know.
It's so weird.
And then you guys completely messed up the formula Beyond. Like, they have this professional thing that's like a joke where they go beyond before they start, and you went on it and completely did not go along with it.
Also, my favorite thing about that show, everyone should watch it.
No,
I think,
don't,
watch
I hate it,
it because not only does Gav look visibly hungover, he's physically incapable of not swearing. Like, they don't swear on that podcast.
Yeah.
And like, Gav says fucking as
fucking I was talking about.
It's brilliant.
I also went on Nintendo Voice Chat and swear once.
That's really
I don't even think I said shit. I know, like, we shouldn't celebrate that, but that's fucking hard, man.
My favourite thing about the Nintendo Voice Chat, which I've also watched, that we talk... You and Krupa talk about going to the Switch hands-on event.
Yeah.
You constantly refer to me and Joe did something, but you never say who I am, so it sounds like you were on a date. Like, oh yeah, me and Joe played Supercalypse. It was lovely.
Wait,
it wasn't a date? Well, I mean, it was.
What do you mean it wasn't a date?
I mean, I treat it that way. It was never audibly said.
So I was on Beyond and Nintendo Voice Chat, and they do it in the same set, which is like a long, nice table, not like this fucking bullshit table that we've got that wobbles.
They can't see the table.
They can't see the table anymore.
If we say it's a good table,
that's
they
why
might
we stopped.
Believe us.
Yeah. This amazing table.
It's amazing.
But also, like, they sit, like, two, then one on each side.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think that's good. Because we've got a circular table, so everyone is like,
basically King Arthur, Lancelot, and Percival.
But with it, like, I couldn't, but they also address the camera as well, so I couldn't, like, I actually couldn't find a position where I was comfortable.
It's also
multi-camera. And it's visibly so.
And it's also
like,
multi-camera.
I look so fucking uncomfortable.
It's a strange chair you're on as well, though, isn't it? Was it a little stool?
No.
Oh, you just made it look like
a stool. I just made it look really horrible. Because also, as well, like, I'm a chubby guy, so I don't want to sit side on.
That's
I ain't got a good side profile.
I'm so glad that we've not got video anymore, because I always sit on the side and I hate how my face profile looks. I look like a weird obelisk.
On our video thing, it kind of worked in the same way. You know, in the Lord of the Rings films, they had the hobbits and Gandalf, and sometimes they'd film Ian McKellen was like...
Oh, like 30 feet back.
Yeah, Ian McKellen would be nearer the camera and then Elijah would be further away. Yeah. It was exactly like that with whoever sat in the host chair looked tiny, and the people on the fringes looked like double their size.
But also, that wouldn't have helped like today, because I would have been in the host chair. You two would be like, I had two gigantors sighting. Like, you're both taller than me anyway, without the fucking mirror thing that Lord of the Rings is doing. Like, I look tiny. But the reason I have to sit in the middle is because I look less fat from the middle than I do from the side. But yeah, there we are. I was going to talk about one thing, actually, before we go into the cool shit that we've done. Because I think this is a genuine thing. Because, I thought it was just me that was doing it. But, like, I tweeted last night that, like, I've got, like, a shame pile of films, games, and TV, like, that I should be working my way through because I work in this industry. And it's just, like, nice to see new things, and I've got all this cool shit. But, like, I'm rewatching Mad Men for, like, a fourth time.
You know what I did last night?
What?
I watched 5 episodes of Game of Thrones Season 1. Which I've watched twice before.
Yeah.
I've never watched past Season 1 of Game of Thrones. We've talked about this loads. Just because I've read all the books and I don't really care. But now I've gone, like, oh, if it's gone past the books, it's all going to be spoiled for me. I might as well get through it. But I have to rewatch it. So I just sat there for 5 hours watching Game of Thrones and just went... There's the Americans. There's like so much stuff I haven't seen.
Krupa gave me the Americans the other day, so I'm like 5 episodes into that, and I love it.
Yeah.
But like, I got home, I was just like, as much as I love the Americans, it's not as good as Mad Men. Like, I think Mad Men, The Wire, and Sopranos are like actually untouchable.
Interesting.
Like, they are the best TV shows. Like, someone last night was like tweeting me about fuck off Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad is an all right show. Like, but it's not like you watch Mad Men, you're like, that is such... It's so smart what it does with characters, and there's nothing else like that on telly, and there hasn't been since Mad Men finished. And I just think, I could watch The Americans, but I could watch Mad Men again.
Yeah. That's like... It's... For me, I think you've got different reasons. For me, like, half of the stuff I watch is just sort of comfort food.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched all 11 series of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just stick it on and do other things, and then enjoy it or
American
go to
Office,
sleep watching it. And, like, it's so easy.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing to having that on, whereas I feel bad not watching things properly otherwise.
But I always felt really, really bad about it, but actually, I didn't realise there's quite a lot of people doing it.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, somebody texted me last night and said, like, she's literally just been rewatching West Wing for about 8 years.
Wait, someone saw your tweet and then texted you?
Yeah.
Well, that's unparalleled access.
I know, right?
Unbelievable.
Too much.
You should sell your number like certain women on the internet sell their Snapchat addresses so that people can get privileged access to the
mercy. Do people do that?
Oh, yes.
Do they?
What? No? I've spent thousands of pounds on boobs.
But yeah, I kind of feel like, because I've recently rewatched Sopranos and I've recently rewatched The Wire in the last year. So I reckon I'll get through Mad Men and then I'm going to blitz all the new stuff that I haven't watched.
No, you're not.
Because do my
That's not going to happen.
What am I going to do?
You're going to watch The Sopranos.
Go back to The Sopranos. Although I did just notice that all Sopranos is on Sky Atlantic in HD.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Very interesting indeed.
Because I didn't watch it in HD when I rewatched it.
What do you watch, or are you good about TV?
Alicia,
now that we're audio, I have to make clear who I'm talking to.
Yeah. No, I tend to watch iPlayer and stuff, whatever's on most...
Really?
Just when I'm... If I want something on in the background, like, which I think is what we're talking about, we want something mind-numbing and meaningless.
I'm not watching Mad Men in the background.
Oh, right.
It's just there.
Like, I don't even have my phone on me when I'm watching Mad Men. Like,
Christ,
I'm, like, concentrating on the episode.
Still,
do you know how much it costs to make an episode of Mad Men?
I don't care.
If I look off, that's, like, 100 grand.
But do you know what? Like, I got to the end of Mad Men. I'm still halfway through the final series. You know, it got to the mid-season finale.
Mm.
Finished. They finished the season, and I've just not worked up the energy to go back and finish it.
It's got
and I came
few
that
episodes.
Far.
Yeah.
The ending was in sight.
Yeah.
And I never made it.
That's madness.
I know.
So do you just watch whatever's on iPlayer?
When I'm getting ready in the morning.
Really?
I either do that or a TED Talk.
Bloody hell.
To be fair, if I can't sleep, I watch a YouTube documentary about snow monkeys narrated by Liam Neeson. So I get you, girl.
I listen to true crime podcasts.
Yeah,
I go to sleep to the dulcet tones of an Australian man telling me about murders.
Well, I think it's a good topic though. So if you have any feelings on that, let us know. IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. But we've been playing shit and doing shit. Alicia,
yeah,
what you been doing? Shit.
Oh, mate, I want to tell you about Prey. Hey, banter.
Very good.
That was very good. I had hands on. I played an hour of Prey a couple of weeks ago. And Prey is a really interesting one because it basically revolves around the idea of deception and paranoia.
Before we get into this, how much of the opening are we giving away?
I'm not going to talk about the twist or the narrative story. And some people have.
Because in the opening?
There's a twist within
in the
first
motherfucking Columbo
hour.
Style.
Yeah.
Columbo episodes are only half an hour long. You don't need to be a twist during the first half hour.
And like the thing is, there are genuinely other outlets that are saying exactly what happens in detail.
Really?
And like, which is fair, you know, you can find the answer if you want. But I think for the purposes of this podcast.
Let's blacklist them.
Our preview has three separate points to stop reading, like gradations of spoiler. Yeah. Which is really good.
Don't get that shit on Eurogamer.
The preview that Joe wrote, it was a good preview. No, you didn't. What am I on about? You
Ryan
did the Horizon.
McCaffrey did.
I'm thinking
McCaffrey,
Horizon preview.
I'll take it.
You'll take that. But no, like, so the beginning of the game, with no spoilers, it sets up this idea that you absolutely cannot trust the world around you, both in settings and in the enemies that you meet. So there's these enemies called mimics that whenever you go into a room, the room looks empty, but the minute you walk into the center of it, objects will turn into these shadowy, spidery, alien creatures.
Like the T-1000?
Basically, but more spindly.
Oh, no. Actually, he could only be living stuff. Sorry. Carry on.
And they kind of launch themselves at your face.
Yeah.
And that's part of the fear of it. The fear is that you never quite know what the world is going to throw at you next. Something can look completely safe or ordinary.
Yeah.
And that sense of constant impending danger when on the surface it looks all right.
You're like, it's a bureau.
It's genuinely quite, you're like, a freaking coffee cup. And you freak out over it. And like, I know that's what I really, the fact that you can't trust the environment around you is a really unique sense of danger.
Right, okay.
Do they ever do a thing where if you turn around, something might have moved very slightly?
Ooh, that's good.
I would love that.
Not that I noticed.
Right,
but like that
I'm out.
Absolutely.
Right.
But then I
Rubbish.
Played an hour of it, you know, and I went, I kind of scratched the surface of the game. But the thing that I really like is that the mimics, their AI is entirely unscripted.
Right.
So even the developers.
So they're just clipping through walls.
Yeah. No.
It's like they're being like animal.
All that their program to do is go in when they go into a room, they can take the form of any object pretty much within that room. So even developers, when they're like watching over your shoulder, they'll be surprised
or
they'll be like,
very nice.
They'll be like, oh, we don't know where the enemy's going to be or what they're going to do. And like sometimes if you're hitting, so the bit that I was played, you were armed at the beginning with a wrench, very much Bioshock style.
Yeah.
And I was meleeing an alien and the other alien clue you saw it went, crap, I'm getting out of here, and sprinted out the door and then disappeared. And like the developer was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, so now it's gone to hide from you. And like just that.
Like, was that a tractor there before?
That unpredictable.
This space station's
really
got
cool.
a big top in it. What's going on? Did you ever have a point where you were convinced that something was an alien? So you went over and just started like
smashing the wardrobe.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I genuinely started doing that. I started going into rooms and like, because you also, there was one point
so
where
it sends
I
you
picked
mad.
Up a thing. There are, you know, you pick up objects. Picked it up, put it in my inventory, it started strangling me, and I died.
That's really good.
It was like, oh. So then
that's
suddenly,
genuinely amazing.
Stuff that you want to pick up because it's useful to you, you're like, oh, it might throttle me.
There's definitely going to be a bit
that's
where
class.
You see a new gun.
Yeah.
And then it's like big arms come out of each end. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, and it's attached to your face.
They essentially look like the shadow form in Dishonored, don't
yes, they?
Yes, they
like, do. And there's a lot of this that riffs off of Dishonored. Actually, I kind of want to just set up the story. I know we're talking about the mechanics, but genuinely, I think some people have watched the trailer and are still not 100% sure what the game's about.
If you've watched some of the trailers, you've had this twist spoiled for you, which is quite sad.
Yeah. No way. I don't know what this is.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me tell you a story, Gavin.
Let me tell you what the
let
twist is.
Let me tell you a story. The year is 2032. We're in an alternate reality. reality where Kennedy was never assassinated.
Good.
And because he was never assassinated as president, he poured a ton of money into the US space program.
Right.
So humanity went further into the galaxy than ever before.
Yeah.
And they attracted the attention of this alien species called Typhon. Mm. Typhon come along, and these kind of spidery alien race that have loads of powers to them. There's a big fight against humanity. And the Americans team up with the USSR and imprison these alien creatures on a space station called Talos, which is orbiting the moon. But rather than just making it like a straight up space station,
a
good old moon prison away from Earth, rather than just like turning it into a prison, they also go, well, let's make this science, let's study these aliens.
Yeah.
So they study the aliens and their powers and see whether they can pull some of them out of them, and through neuroscience put some of the superpowers into humans.
Men.
So this is now where you come in. You can play as either a male or female person called Morgan Yu, who's working alongside a corporation.
To get it, you.
Who,
like you.
Like you. Hey, I actually hadn't seen that. Well done.
Wow.
You play as John Everyman.
Morgan Yu. And you're basically working with this corporation to study the aliens.
Yeah.
But as with all things, something goes a bit wrong on the space station, and suddenly it's a race against the clock,
right,
kind of Alien Isolation Ripley style,
to
stop the aliens from getting to Earth.
Right.
So the premise, actually, when I first heard this premise, I was a bit like, eye roll, come on, we've seen this story so many times of stopping the aliens from getting to Earth. But what makes this such an interesting game to play is that sense that I was talking about of danger and distrust. And genuinely, Bethesda's done a really good job at creating this environment, because we know they're good at it. We know with Dishonored creates...
Well, it's Arkane rather than Bethesda.
Sorry, yeah, okay, but it's published by Bethesda. Yeah. But like,
Bethesda fucking ain't doing anything.
They're just
putting
money back. They're just throwing money at it.
Bethesda,
not work.
The Bethesda are as involved in the production of this game as I am.
That's not true.
They do a bit more.
They're too busy with fucking Morrowind or some shit.
But yeah, Bethesda publish it, Arkane develop it. And we've seen with Dishonored these huge sprawling worlds. Well, not sprawling worlds, but like these sprawling levels where you can really get into the nook and cranny of something. We've talked on this podcast before about the Clockwork Mansion.
Best level ever.
In Dishonored 2, which is an incredible level design, where you genuinely want to go into every crawl space and see like the fragments of the characters who inhabit that space. You want to see like the items that have been dropped, how you can, the secret areas. And I'm really intrigued by Talos, the space station. I'm intrigued as you're going around, you can go into computers and find the passwords of the people who own those computers and read their emails, and you can like see what they were up to and what they were working on, and you build this picture of actually what this massive experiment is.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think I've not seen like the full range of what's available to you.
Yeah.
I didn't even get on. It was the first hour of the game. I didn't even get onto the superpowers.
Yeah.
But as a setup of the story, I'm intrigued enough.
I'm up for it.
Do you ever get that thing where a game, like a tiny bit of meaningless design for some reason really works for you?
Yeah.
Like watching your footage, the one thing that I really liked, and I don't know why, is when you go onto someone's computer, it doesn't do that thing where it zooms in on the screen and the screen fills your screen.
Oh, okay.
As if you're suddenly in the computer.
Yeah.
It's just in front of you and you're like pushing the buttons.
Yeah.
Ooh,
so the computer camera screen, actually
it feels
stays
more real.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like that so much.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's probably going to get really annoying because I have to like push really close to the screen.
No, but it didn't get annoying to me the whole time that I was playing it. There was something really nice about it, because it's just, it doesn't take down that fourth wall that says to you, this is a video game.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're going to faceplant the monitor.
Yeah.
It like keeps it at a distance in the same way in real life. You'd read it from a distance.
That's the best thing in Deus Ex Human Revolution on Wii U. Like the hacking minigame was all on
the gamepad,
but the game kept going. Mm-hmm. So it meant that you were like hacking and then on the screen looking around being like, fuck, is anyone coming whilst I'm hacking into this?
Yeah.
It felt really cool. Mm. Like that kind of removing one step really works for me.
I really want to play it. Like I spoke to Ryan McCaffrey about it a little bit when we were out there, and he said a really funny thing about, basically he was talking to the devs going like, why is this a prey game?
Mm.
And they were like, do you know how much it costs to come up to one, like, patent a name. And you know how hard it is to come up with a name that is not patented in some way, shape, or form? It's like, that's why this game is called Prey.
That's really good.
That's interesting. Because we asked the developers about that, and they just said, it's a really cool name.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, technically, so Prey was a game that came out in, like, 2006.
Exactly, yeah.
And the sequel was just absolutely languishing in development hell before Bethesda did pick it up, the rights to it.
Yeah, it belonged to... not Machine Head, that's a band. Someone Head. Human Head, I think. And they were making a Bounty Hunter game set on a space station.
Right, okay.
So, like, because Bethesda had the rights to it and then announced they were making, you know, a Prey game, we were like, oh, cool, this is going to be a sequel. But actually, the Prey's director, Raphael Colantonio, turned around.
I hate the way you have notes for this.
I know.
It makes you way too professional.
I've just written Mad Men Watch.
Dad's done, like, a really weird, creepy eye. Is it an eye? It's like a diamond with, like, a slit pupil doodle on his sheet of paper.
That's a curse.
Is it a curse?
I've cursed the running order.
It's like a cursed room.
And anyone listening to this is cursed.
What did Raphael say? Raphael Colantonio said there's no direct connection between the two games.
Good.
And actually, the link is thematic in the fact just that the games are both first person and they're both about aliens set on a space station.
And because it's hard to patent a name.
I think that's genuinely kind of what happened. I think Bethesda kind of went, cool, let's make a game. It's a really cool name. Let's get the rights to that name and, like, we'll play it around the same themes.
Yeah. It's also everyone wanted Prey 2. There's going to be a certain group, like, probably not a massive group, but there is going to be a group of people who just buy it because it's another
Absolutely,
Prey game.
Yeah.
Like, it helps.
So they have that, and then they have the new people as well. Good stuff. Well done.
Gav's done with that.
Gav is done with this conversation. Move on.
We don't even have, technically, a central host anymore, but he's still doing it.
Wait, before we move on, I want to tell the lovely people that it launches on May the 5th. On PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Because that's useful news.
Joe, what did you see last week while I was away?
I saw Thimbleweed Park, which is the new game by Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick, who made Maniac Mansion, and then Ron Gilbert went on to make The Secret of Monkey Island.
Everything
and Monkey
was
Island
good.
2. Essentially, he helped create the modern adventure game, and I met him for the second time. He remains the nicest man in the world.
Did
and
he remember
also,
you?
No, of course he didn't. Yeah. The first time I met him...
You had long hair, though, when you met him the first time, so...
And I was fresh-faced and thinner. The first time I met him, he was promoting a game called The Cave.
I like The Cave.
Cave's all right. Yeah. It's not great, but it's all right. Yeah. 6 out of 10. And I met him in a cave, and I was like, hey... I think it was my first ever interview in the industry. And I was like, hey, how's it going today? And he goes, well... I made the cave because I'm really claustrophobic and I hate caves, and they've put me in a cave, so I'm kind of pissed off.
Yeah.
And that's his whole thing, is he's just like slight... His Twitter name is Grumpy Gamer, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's literally just that the whole time. He's lovely, but he's constantly slightly miffed about something.
Yeah, he looks... He's got like... whatever the male version of resting bitch face is. Like, he's just constantly frowning, which I have as well, but like...
Do you? Yeah. I've never noticed you have
If I'm walking around, like, people are taking photos of me, like, walking, which is really creepy.
Really?
But like, I look so angry. They were like, what's wrong? Like,
I had a group of Italians on the underground who were talking about me in Italian, saying, thinking I didn't understand, going like, oh, look at that girl over
Humble
there.
Brag.
She has no friends. I'm just like casually in for their own. Thinking, oh yeah, do you reckon she has any friends? She looks so
what
sad.
Thing?
And like, the thing is, I was going to King's
Cross. Do you reckon
Cross,
she enjoys her life?
I was slightly late for a train, so I was like, I was a tiny bit stressed.
Yeah.
And I think the combination of that and my resting bitch face turned me into this monster.
You in no way have rest.
No. These people absolutely believe
you look like you're flying on a cloud 24/7.
You look like you're always on some kind of mild drug.
Yeah.
And you say that you
what a horrible thing to say. Look at that girl. Do you think she has any friends?
What a strange, like, what a weird judgment to immediately come to. Just like, probably she doesn't have friends.
She's no friends. Yeah. No friends.
Thimbleweed Park
is, it's...
About the X-Files.
It's not.
Oh.
He's never watched The X-Files,
Shut
Ron Gilbert.
It. He's a liar.
He's never watched
I've seen the trailer. He's watched at least all of The X-Files.
I asked him about that because the two main characters on first glance basically are Mulder and Scully.
They look exactly fucking like him.
But then one of them's Hispanic, so that's not
done
like
me.
Mulder.
Absolutely done me.
And the other one is not like Scully.
Her name is Sally Mully.
They're called Ray and Reyes. So anyway, it's essentially a game in which a dead body turns up at the start, and these two FBI agents who hate each other and didn't know the other one was going to be there are forced to work together to work out what's going on.
Okay.
From the bit I've played, it's not a murder mystery game so much as it's like a sort of Twin Peaksy small town, like what's going on in this place mystery. Okay. But it's a classic 80s adventure game in the sense that it's hilarious and everything is built around just making stupid jokes constantly.
Right.
Like, it makes fun of itself. It makes fun of Lucasfilm. Like, they've got a games company in it called Mucus Phlegm. They keep taking the piss out of...
Still bitter about that, isn't he?
Yeah. They keep taking the piss out of Sierra, who made the famous adventure games before he made them. Yeah. And just saying, like, it's not like Sierra games where you could die all the time. This is a much better made adventure game. And just constantly... It's just good. Referring to itself, making stupid jokes. Yeah. The most impressive thing about it is it plays like a modern game. It looks like those old games, but it's constantly worked out ways to streamline that process. So things as small as the obvious action on an item, if you right click, it goes and does that. You don't have to go pick up this thing. If it thinks you should be picking this up, you just right click it and it always works.
That's good.
And then it's also got this, it was made primarily by Kickstarter.
Was it?
So yeah, which I didn't know. It loves its backers so much, and they've put so much stuff in there that's just like referencing those people. So you can go to a phone book and it has a list of every single backer in it, as you would expect.
Oh, that's nice.
Every single backer has a phone number and you can phone that number, and or like I think it's a third of them, so that's like 1,000 people have recorded voicemail messages for that phone number.
Wow.
And some of them like have banded together and made like little stories. So you like phone one. So Ron Gilbert hasn't heard all of these. And I was chatting to him and he was like, I found this one where someone said he was at someone else's house and you should phone there. So you phone there and then there at someone else and it tells like a little story.
That's so cool.
And that's amazing.
There's this mansion with a library in it.
Yeah.
The library is for like literally thousands of books.
Yeah.
And every single one was part written by a backer.
Oh my god.
And there's like choose your own adventures and like little joke stories.
So you can actually go in and pick up a book and read the contents.
You can read every single book. And they're all like they're basically mostly like 2 pages at most.
Yeah.
But it's so
brilliant. That's still good value. You're that's buying awesome. A game and getting 1,000 books free.
It's genuinely really interesting. And it constantly does this stuff. So they got to make little...
It's really annoying. We're not allowed to do any video stuff with the build that we've got.
No.
What the fuck?
I think it's not finished.
Because Ron doesn't know anything about video because he's old. He's like,
you may talk about it on the phone, but that's it.
How rude.
I know.
But it's kind of flying under the radar, and it seems really sad because... I got a friend who he only plays FIFA and Far Cry and stuff.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he remembers every single puzzle in the original Monkey Island. Like that's just burned into his brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I sat him down and got him to play this build.
Cool.
Don't tell anyone; it's probably illegal. And embargo
busting.
I know, right? And he was just like, "Yeah, this is great. Like I didn't know anyone made games like this anymore."
They don't.
This is the first time since like. The 80s, or you know, like early 90s, that they've made a game like this.
That's really strange, isn't it? Because, like,
that's not true, but anyway,
I know what you mean. But, like, it's kind of strange, of like, because, like, people who like Monkey Island games, like, there's a big group of people who grew up playing Monkey Island games and then maybe stopped playing video games and maybe went on to something else. Like, my dad played the Monkey Island games, like, and if I told him that there was a Monkey Island game about, but it's really strange, like, the thing that strikes me is fucking ukulele, like. Not in a bad way, but like ukulele, like the way that was funded was tapping into, and perfectly so, like the people behind the ukulele Kickstarter, like tapped into like that nostalgia shit.
Yep.
Like people going, oh, we want a 3D platformer. Like we want another Banjo-Kazooie. Mm. Like the people at Playtonic, like absolutely knew that.
Yeah.
And they tapped into it. One of the most successful like Kickstarters there's ever been. And the game looks good. And it's like going to come out and people are going to bum it. Like... Why isn't Ron Gilbert doing the same thing? Being like, I didn't see his Kickstarter, in fairness. Mm. But I would have been like, all right, I made Monkey Island games you absolutely love. Give me some money.
I think he kind of has.
Oh, okay, right.
It's just that maybe that group isn't as big.
Yeah,
like maybe Nintendo 64 nostalgia is bigger than, you know, Commodore 64. That's pretty good. Well done. But it's...
Easier, aren't they?
Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie is easier than Monkey Island.
Definitely that.
Yeah.
Definitely that. But I... If you like those old school adventure games, you must look at it. It's genuinely fun. Like, I very rarely laugh at at games, yeah. and I was properly laughing in front of Ron Gilbert, which is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And
he was like, all right, mate, chill out.
Jesus, I'm fawning much.
I'm not going to wank you off.
I'm grumpy, all right? I'm not going to laugh with you. But yeah, you really got to check it out. It's something special. And I think it's out quite soon, actually.
Outstanding.
Yay!
I played a little game.
Did you?
Called Normal Lost Phone.
I still haven't played this.
It's very good. It's
Bye.
It's a phone game that you play on your phone. Basically, the premise is you found a phone.
Right.
And the game just looks like a phone's interface. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't look like a phone's interface that you or I may have. It's all hand-drawn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So there's a really lovely style to it. Mm. So you have that, and basically you've just got to solve... like what's going on in this person's life that's had them lose their phone.
Right.
So it becomes clear very early on that the guy who had the phone has kind of gone missing.
Okay.
So basically you're reading through messages, you're solving these little puzzles. Like at one point you need to find the Wi-Fi code for the general area that you're in to connect to more things.
Okay.
So you're looking through like things that have been saved onto the phone mm-hmm. first. And through that then you start to, I kind of think I've worked out where it's going story-wise. Mm-hmm. But it's generally just really good. Like I didn't know, like it's just one of those like emails that we just got like from PRs and stuff. They were just like, oh, check out this thing. And I was like, just happened to be on the train. I was like, oh, yeah. I'll check this out.
So it sounds... we've talked about the Mr. Robot game.
Yeah.
And we talked about that off the back of when I was judging the IMGAs in Kuala Lumpur. Yeah. The game that we absolutely loved was and one where you picked up this phone that belonged to a missing girl and you're in like the... It's a trope.
It's not this game,
seen,
is it?
It's a trope that we've seen a lot in, even from, what was the name of the game? Lifeline. Yeah. Onwards, the idea of your phone being a portal to... another communication device. But you know, that's an interesting mechanic in the sense of it being hand-drawn.
Oh, it's lush. It looks really good, and like there's pictures in it, and it's really mysterious. But also, like when you start the app, it plays the guy's music from his music collection. So you listen to
I was gonna say, is it like Mr. Robot on Lifeline in that you're having to wait in real time for stuff to happen?
No.
Or does it, so it's instant? So it is essentially an
moment,
adventure game.
At the moment, so I feel like, but at the moment it is, but I think stuff like that might start happening.
Oh, okay.
Because like when you're connected to the Wi-Fi, and also I saw something the other day that was like, you could turn off tones for incoming messages.
Right.
And I was like, it probably wouldn't have that unless I was going to start getting loads of incoming messages. Because I've only played a little bit of it, but it's just like, I genuinely really, really like it because I'm saving it for every morning when I come into work. So I'm only playing it on the way in and stuff.
That's cool.
Because it's just a nice little thing to do. Mm. And I don't want to like burn through it because I feel like I do that quite a lot with stuff that I really like.
Yeah.
Like fucking rewatching Mad Men. Like I started that 2 weeks ago. I'm on season 5. Like, it's absolutely obscene.
It's more, it's nice to be playing a game on your commute, a mobile game where actually you're intrigued by the story and how it's going to unfold alongside the puzzle mechanics, because a lot of the games that we see people commuting on the train with are your Candy Crushes, your Match Threes, and
this is literally just reading but it's like got that nice thing of like reading another person's phone, like, which is quite good.
There is something
something deliciously naughty.
Speaking of both of those things in one, this morning on the train this guy next to me was like properly like twitching about, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? You know, sometimes you just get sat next to a nutcase and it's really uncomfortable. I looked around and it was because he was playing like a bullet hell shooter on his phone. And then eventually he literally just went ugh, and like turned it off, and I was like, and started scrolling through his phone, and I was like, oh, he's going to look for another game. I'm going to have a cheeky look at what he does. Turns on like stocks and shares and starts looking through all these like really high priced shares he has. And I was like,
you're like, that's a shit game.
Successful Andy plays bullet hell shooters. Marry me.
Yeah. And you're having a spring wedding.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah. It's the only thing at the moment that I'm not really digging about it is a couple of the conversations that he's having, this person's having with other people, they feel very natural.
Yeah.
But there's a girl in there that he's dating, and it's like he's talking to his mum. Oh, it's not written like, because like a lot of it as well, is like he's talking to some people that are like at the beginning of their relationship. And like, I've like recently started dating someone, and I, like the other day, she sent me a screenshot of like the first messages we sent to each other. And we started talking in like December.
Yeah.
But she sent me a screenshot, and she was just like, this doesn't even feel like it's us.
Yeah.
Like, and that at the moment, even though this guy is meant to be going out with this girl for weeks or for months, sorry, the conversation they're having feels like it's very much at the beginning of their relationship.
That's a shame.
And it's not That's not on purpose. I think it's just a poorly written.
That's the problem with all of these games.
Like, yeah. The trouble with bad writing in.
It's not. I'm not saying it's a badly written game. I'm just saying that particular conversation isn't written well.
Dialogue is a massive part of a game and character creation, and that does fall down to bad writing. And we saw it in Her Story. I love that game. I absolutely love that game.
I can't stand it.
I really like it.
You're insane.
I can't stand it.
And I love it because of its mechanics, and it's really unique. And I played it with a pen and paper and with my phone. But
she can't act for shit.
That's so untrue.
She's awful.
But where it falls down on, actually, I think that she's working with a script that is at times very wooden, and the lines, it's a classic case of Destiny and Tyrion Lannister. What's his name?
God, what is his name?
What is his name?
Rube Goldberg.
Oh, this is going to really bug me. But, his voice acting.
Jonathan. Dawn Bush.
What?
I don't know.
US news editor.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage! Thank God. Well done, Gavin. You saved the podcast. But yeah, Peter Dinklage was pulled off of doing the voice of
Peter Dinklage was pulled off as he was.
Watching Game of Thrones again.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So he was pulled off, and it was. I can't even say it
anymore.
Stop
it. So he was taken off the project.
Taken off.
That sounds worse.
That sounds awful. What have we done? Anyway, voice acting can be bad when the script is bad. There you go.
I really. The game is brilliant. The game is intriguing, but it's fucking £2. So it's like, if you think any of that sounds good, have a bang on it. Like, I'm completely into it. Something else that I'm completely into. So this is quite cool. Today, the day that we're recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think this is, you get these bullshit anniversaries, all the time. It's like, it's been 27 years since this fucking came out and shit like that. I saw last year, and I was like, this is really good. It's the 20th anniversary of a Simpsons episode called Homer's Phobia.
Right.
Do you guys both know this episode?
No.
Remind me of what happens?
So it's got John Waters as a special guest. Mm. And essentially, Homer and Marge are trying to sell this sort of figurine to get some money. And they go to this sort of it's kind of like sort of not bric-a-brac, but it's kind of like cult toy shop.
Okay.
To sell this figurine. And they go in, and the guy who runs the shop is John Waters. He plays a guy called John, and he's gay. And so then they become friends with him. Homer invites him over, not realizing that John is gay. And homosexuality in The Simpsons before this has kind of been a little bit sort of silly.
Yeah.
With Smithers and just constant jokes alluding to the fact that he might be gay.
Mm.
Whereas this is a proper open gay person who talks about being gay, and Homer has a problem with it.
Right.
At the beginning of the episode. And basically Homer's problem is that he thinks Bart is going to grow up gay. And it turns out Homer does some really shitty stuff, because he's homophobic during the episode, and obviously he changes by the end of it. But it also does in a very, very funny Simpsons way. John ends up saving Homer's life, John makes a really, really funny joke, which is because Homer by the end comes around and he's just like, do you know what? You're okay. And John goes, well, if only every other gay man in America could just save someone's life, we'd be okay. And it's obviously ridiculous. But it's generally one of the best Simpsons episodes. It's voted for far and wide as one of the best Simpsons episodes. But it's the 20th anniversary of it. Today.
There are so many 20th anniversaries.
Yeah.
We've had Resident Evil, we've had Lara Croft, Simpsons episodes, Trainspotting.
Yeah.
So, God, 20 years ago was really good.
The 90s
good
were
for,
fucking
like...
brilliant. People don't remember the 90s well enough. Because people think the 90s was fucking shite, take that and stuff like that. But actually, there's some decent stuff going on.
Generation X, baby.
Yeah.
Commercials.
I was looking at stuff the other day because I was trying to get the Americans onto an idea, which is they should do a video which every year, because obviously as you're 20, if 21 means, it feels like it means more in the world becoming 21 than it does 18. 18 over here is just I don't know, but it feels like it feels like it's stricter in America in terms of boozing and stuff.
It's linked to alcohol.
That's what I mean, linked to alcohol. But I don't know, I was fucking boozing. It feels like British people booze a lot earlier than 18 than Americans do before 21.
How old were you when you first got drunk?
14.
Really? Yeah. What about you, Joe?
Probably later. I was quite.
No
way.
He was getting like port like with his sandwich box from the age of four.
I had a glass of wine with my school lunch.
I had a glass of wine with my mackerel, and I'll hear no more about it.
68 Pinot.
You know, like the little glasses that you get at sometimes at like really posh cinemas, where it's just like a glass but with like a foil the top. On it.
You say really posh. A glass with foil on the top.
is that not posh?
We're not posh. But yeah, I was trying to get the American guys to do a video which is like films that are turning 21 this year, and then just have like all the scenes where people are drinking from it, because there's quite a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, so we actually interviewed John Waters last year because he had a book coming out, and it was Tilly who did the interview actually, and he was like, is there anything you want to ask him? And I was like, John Waters for me, I don't even like some of John Waters films I've seen when I was at uni, they're not for me. Yeah. Like, if I think of John Waters, I immediately think of John from The Simpsons, because it's one of my favorite episodes. So I was like, I went and did the like film day, Tilly was doing the questions, but like I was like, oh, can you ask him about The Simpsons episode? Like, it's the 20th anniversary next year, maybe we could do a video with it. Unfortunately, like because Tilly didn't know that episode, so like John Waters starts talking about
he
it.
He fucked it, is what you're saying.
I'm not saying he fucked it.
And that's why he was fired.
And that's why he was fired, yeah.
But he wasn't fired.
He kind of, like, I would have, like, we only had, I think we only had 25 minutes, or I could have done 25 minutes on that episode. Like,
John Waters wouldn't have liked that.
I don't know. But then that's the thing.
I once saw him at the theatre.
Did you? Yeah, because that's the thing. Tilly asks him about it, and then he basically starts describing. I'm putting this video up, so it'll be up now, so you can check it out. But Tilly, he starts describing, like, just what I assumed happened when you do the voice for a cartoon. He's like, and you go in and they give you a script and you read it out, and it's kind of like a radio production because they do the voices first and then the anime. And I was just like, yeah, I just assumed that's how it would work.
So wait, what's this video?
So the video then, he starts talking about, like, because of the Simpsons episode, he gets children coming up to him.
Oh, I see.
And, like, recognise him. And he's like, obviously, I look like a child molester. So, parents don't want children coming up to me. But because of the Simpsons, he gets it all the time.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool, yeah. But, yeah, it's just a nice little thing that I've done that I thought people could check out.
Very cool. I can't believe you had a feature idea a year in advance.
I know.
You absolute maniac.
I know. But that's the thing, like, because, like, he kind of starts talking about it. And if I was Tilly, I'd have, like, pressed him a little bit more on it. But
like a grape.
Obviously, Tilly had more pressing things on his mind, didn't he?
Should probably stop mugging off ex's colleagues.
Nah. But what good stuff. But I tell you what's even better than that.
What
stuff.
What could it be?
Keyword Countdown. Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown. I wasn't here last week, and I've heard very good things about Boss Keyword Countdown.
It was fun.
It was a good
one. It was really
good.
Good time had by listeners.
But this is. We got no time for spin offs here, guys. Because
this is the real deal.
Who likes games?
We are nuts deep in season two of Keyword Countdown.
Don't need that.
Joe, I believe you're top.
But only by virtue of playing more.
Only by virtue of playing more. Okay. So, Alicia,
I'm going to carry on that.
Everyone
trend.
Else is counting on you today.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so sorry.
Because even Al's
interview
now, since Al went up against Powers and had like an absolute, probably my favorite.
That was an amazing
keyword
round.
Countdown. Where they went up against him. It was just fantastic. So Al's into it now as well.
Thing is, now we've also changed the setup. Rather than being sat opposite Joe, I'm now next to him. But no, it's
that's
fine.
That's good, because I won't be put off by Alicia fucking marking out. Like,
it now means
insane.
That I can reach across. His mic is within arm's distance, so I could easily take it and throw it across
the
room.
Do you know what I realise just now? And we should never do this, but I realise that you can actually turn this. So if someone's saying something I don't like, I can turn it around and you won't be able to hear it.
This is how we get Dale's special audio effect. Yeah. We spin the desk around.
We literally spin it.
Right, if you don't know, IMDb categorised their films by a bunch of crazy keywords. And what I've done is taken 5 films, 10 keywords from each, and you have to guess what the film is by those keywords. That's the best I've ever done that intro.
That was great.
That was
ever.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's only taken a year and a half.
Yeah.
But finally, I know what my own fucking game is.
As long as you say crazy keywords, I don't care what else you say, because that's my favourite bit.
Yeah, yeah. So, 5 films. There's a link between them all.
Okay.
And I wrote this last night, and I don't write the names of the films on the paper, so I'm hoping as I go through I'll be able to play this game as well.
Please work that out before we start guessing.
I've got it.
You're stroking your moustache, looking slightly panicked. Oh, I've got,
yeah, hang on. Yeah,
this
yeah.
is...
I've slept since then.
A calf.
Yeah, fine.
Great.
Easy, done.
Oh. Make it up.
No, I can't.
Make sure we get 10 every time.
I've got them. Anyway, one word title.
Alien.
Shakespeare's The Tempest.
Ooh.
Oh, Christ.
Ooh.
Cartoon dog.
One word title.
Scooby-Doo.
Raccoon.
The Raccoons. The movie.
Greed.
Pocahontas.
Yes.
Fuck. I did not know The Tempest was that.
Well done.
Thank God for Disney.
Oh, Greed. Nice one.
6 points.
Raccoon.
Sweet.
Outstanding.
Never watched that film.
The other things, anthropomorphic tree. Racism. Mining, Native American, Forbidden Love. I saw Shakespeare's The Tempest as a keyword, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess it kind of is." So I started reading this essay about it, and the comments underneath the essay was like, "No, Pocahontas is based on Pocahontas." It's like, yeah, it's a good point too. Excellent. Six
Classic.
Points. Second film, Pet Ferret. Obscene finger gesture. Gay slur.
Oh my God.
Psychopath.
That sounds horrible.
Mm.
Two-word title.
Oh, no, it's not The Big Lebowski.
Single mother. Teacher.
Bad teacher.
Coolio's video for
school.
Gangster's Paradise.
Tough cop.
What?
It's going to be like a comedy something, isn't
16
it?
16 Candles.
Final one.
Breakfast
Stop
Club.
Watch.
Bernard's Watch!
Pet Ferret. Obscene finger gesture. Gay slur. Psychopath. Two-word title.
Psychopath?
Single mother. Teacher. School.
Maybe it's not a comedy if it's got a psychopath.
Tough cop. Stopwatch.
Stop.
Not a clue.
This is going to really annoy me.
Kindergarten Cop.
I've never seen it.
Would never have got it.
Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
You and Vin Diesel.
So good. It's
not Vin Diesel.
It's good.
Jesus Christ.
It's very good.
Never
very
seen
good.
It.
Okay. Film number three. Watch Kindergarten Cop. It's
I
want amazing. To
watch Kindergarten Cop with Vin Diesel. as one of the kindergartners.
Yeah.
Little baby boy.
I once watched Kindergarten Cop with a friend of mine, like hungover. You know, like when you're in that really sort of weird hangover, like sort of strange
silly mood,
silly energy. Yeah, we were watching Kindergarten Cop at my house, and there's a bit where there's a lady who was in a lot of 80s and 90s films, who's like kind of short, sort of really weird face, but she was in a bunch of stuff as like different characters. Like she was always like a principal or like a councilwoman or something like
she
that.
She looked like a figure of authority.
Yeah. And there's a bit where she does this like karate move. Because Arnold Schwarzenegger punches a guy who's been hitting his kids.
Right.
And she's
I remember that.
And she says, like, what did it feel like to hit that son of a bitch? And then he walks out to the office, and as he shuts the door, she shuts the door behind him, she like does this thing.
Yeah.
And me and my friend became so obsessed with that, just one thing. We watched it, I'm not even joking, for about an hour.
I've done that
like,
before.
Yeah, just watching like Skybox had like A-B repeat basically, and it was just like boom, boom, boom. I did a video about like a funny video about that scene as well, which I'll send you, Joe. film number three, High School.
Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
No!
Yes!
Of all the films that are set in high school.
It's literally just because I said it on the last one.
Said it just now, yeah. He said it just now for that.
God's sake!
I wondered if you would get that.
Well done.
Jesus Christ,
well
Joe.
Well done.
Never even seen it.
Have you?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. High School. Teenage Rebellion.
That was good.
Exposed Underwear. Three-word title. Single set production. Rage.
Smoke up, Johnny.
1980s. Self-acceptance. Cult film. Detention. Well done.
I would have got it on Detention.
Yeah.
10 or 1. That's what I would have got it.
Yeah. Nowhere in between. 10-6. Two films left. All to play for.
Have I officially... Oh, no. Dale's got 2 on the first guess. I want to be the first to get a million.
Wait, how many have you got? You've added 2 on the first guess before, haven't you?
That's my second.
That's okay, fine, good. Here we go. Neo-noir.
Brick.
Murder.
Oh, Brick. Oh, Sin City.
Computer.
hackers.
Evidence. Eye scanning.
Eye scanning?
Minority
report?
Yes. I'm going to have to give you that on jetpack.
I love
no,
that
scanning.
Film yeah. as well.
5 points to Joe there. 15 points. 15 to 6. Jetpack. Two-word title. Bandaged face.
Is it?
Predictive policing. Philip K. Dick.
Ten. Predictive policing before Philip K. Dick.
15-6 to Joe. One film left. Lysia, if you get this on the first go...
Wouldn't that be one amazing?
Oh, yeah, no, we have
to. Are you saying that because there's a chance that I could get it on the first
Absolutely,
go.
It was always a chance. if you get on the first go, you will win tonight, this week.
Okay, that's. Can you do a really long pause after the first clue, please?
That's some quick maths from you there, Gav.
Yeah. Okay. Medieval times.
Okay.
Your Highness.
Medieval times. A Knight's Tale.
Black Knight with Martin Lawrence.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Keep going.
No. What's the name of that? Kingdom of Heaven.
Tournament.
It's not a Knight's Tale.
Hero.
Tournament.
It's not a Knight's Tale.
I know, it's just the only one that it should be.
Tax.
Oh, Sherry, fucking Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Anthropomorphic bear.
Men in tights.
Anthropomorphic bear?
Friends who live together.
What?
Fucking hell. Oh, Princess Bride?
Sheriff.
It must be a Robin Hood film.
Robin Hood with Russell Crowe.
No.
Robin Hood's... The Disney version?
Yes.
Fucking hell.
Anthropomorphic bear, Joe.
I don't know.
Russell Crowe's not a bear.
There's loads of them. All bears, when they stand up, seem anthropomorphic to me.
Well done, Lysia.
Yeah. You know what? I'm happy with 10 points.
Yeah, 10
on
to 15.
Round
to be fair, like, you should be happy losing to someone who gets it on first go.
Yeah.
Like,
you should be happy losing to me in all situations.
Sheriff, Archer, Outlaw, Disney. That was a fantastic round of keyword
theme.
Countdown. Well done, guys.
Do you know what the theme is?
Dead directors?
It's two.
Just because I know that you
Disney
did that with Robin
now,
Hood.
Yeah. Which is really unusual. You don't normally have Disney this films.
Something
to do with, like, kids' movies. Something to do with...
It's quite hard.
Run through all of them again.
So we got Pocahontas.
Yep.
Kindergarten Cop.
Kindergarten
Breakfast
Cop.
Club.
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club. Minority Report. And Robin Hood.
Based on other sources?
Really
very good. Very, very good guess.
I don't know what a Kindergarten Cop would be based on.
Okay, I'll give you a clue. It's so each film has a character. One of the main characters is called this name.
John.
Robin. Oh.
John. Robin. There you go, Joe.
John Kimball.
I'm giving you 16. You get 16 for that.
It's not a tumor.
There you go. Brilliant. Outstanding. We got
that was great.
We got some feedback.
We do.
Go.
This is from Addy Ratahali. And Addy says, with the Nintendo Switch only weeks away from launch, EA has announced their FIFA game in the fall will in fact be FIFA 18. Having previously been burnt buying FIFA 13 on Wii U, finding it sluggish and a scaled down version compared to the PS4 Xbox equivalent, I am skeptical of EA's intentions for FIFA 18 on the Switch. Their intentions.
Yeah.
However,
I intend for it to be bad.
However, the possibility of having FIFA 18 being portable does excite me and could be a new way to enjoy the series. What are your thoughts? Now, I've got thoughts.
Okay.
Because they released the first footage of this yesterday.
And, did they?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a Japanese Nintendo Switch advert.
Right.
And it has 15 seconds of FIFA. The things that I came away with were, it looks right. It looks like a proper version of FIFA.
Yeah.
It does look worse than PS4 and Xbox One. Like, right. Significantly. The character models look really flat compared to it. And someone from Digital Foundry or something said it doesn't look like the lighting can be from Frostbite, which is engine they've moved
that
to
was the
with
big
FIFA.
Thing.
Yeah, that was their huge deal. So, essentially, it looks like exactly what I expected and what I kind of want from FIFA 18.
Right.
Like, I want it to be basically the game everyone else gets, and I don't care if it's scaled back a bit just to fit on there.
In terms of graphics?
Yeah. Okay. I don't care how it looks because I'm going to be playing it on a tiny screen.
Yeah.
Like, if I get a FIFA game that I can, like, walk around, like, I can beat in the office or on the train playing FIFA The Journey, That's brilliant. That's perfect, because sitting down to play FIFA at home,
I'm never going to do that.
Didn't enjoy it that much. If I'm going to play a football game properly, I'll play Pro Evo or nothing at all. But if I want like silly, just let's kick about whilst I'm on the move, that seems great.
And good.
All the signs they've given seem to point to them actually giving a shit about this time. And they haven't before. And they've not given this much notice before. So Addy, I think you're going to be fine, basically. I think it's going to be great. And as long as you're happy with a bit of a scaled down version. Ace.
Good job, Addy. Thanks for writing in. Alicia, what y'all got?
Next up, we've got an email from Arthur White, who says, "Hi, gang. Regarding the DLC question," which we talked about on last week's podcast.
What did you talk about?
It was if DLC comes out so soon after release, a la Resident Evil 7, has it been held back and is that all right?
Don't know.
Like, has it been cut out of the main game
main
just game to be released?
So as... that they can squeeze a little bit more money out of you.
Hope not.
Okay. So, Arthur White says, regarding the DLC question, "I think the problem is the sense of entitlement that gamers often feel leads us to believe that we should get all that we can get in a game. I haven't played Resident Evil 7, but everyone seems to love it, meaning you're getting your money's worth. Well, us plebs, not you journos who get free stuff." Let's suppose
Dale did boast about that last week. Not boast.
Well, no, it wasn't a boast. He was just saying
Dale.
He was admitting that we have a slightly different experience.
Yeah.
Let's suppose Capcom had finished three pieces of DLC before the main game was even released. Why should they give it to you for nothing if the main game provides a quality and complete experience? This way you know there's value in the season pass. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Arthur."
Also, like, people, the thing that I always think as well is, like, games aren't being done the night before they come out.
Yeah.
The DLC, people will be working on the DLC probably from the start of that game. There'll probably be an entire team who are working on that DLC from the start when everyone else is working on it, because they know the DLC is a part of things. Mm. So just because it's not on the disc, like, you don't know when that disc was made.
No.
Like, you don't know when the game went gold.
So,
like,
yeah. So, but what do you actually feel? Do you like that they create something to release afterwards?
I don't know, but because, as you say, like, it's a very different thing, because, like, we're in a very different position where we don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Like, but and I kind of feel like if you did spend 50 quid on it, and then a week later there's some other stuff, and you're like,
that is literally what happened.
Yeah.
That's mad.
I can completely see that. But, I mean, even, you know, before I worked as a games journalist and stuff, and, you know, and there are games that obviously we don't always get for free. Like, let's remove this from the question, just talk objectively as gamers who have been gaming all our lives and experienced DLC.
Yeah.
Like, when I look at, say, for instance, The Last of Us DLC, bloody loved that. And that's a story. It's a story that's being created outside of the main campaign. I absolutely don't mind paying extra for that, because I look at it and I go, that doesn't make sense in the main campaign, which I've experienced and loved and paid for. And it's clearly had a ton of extra work put into it, months of prep and time. I don't mind paying developers for that time to bring me something extra that I love.
I do like Arthur's point of, does the game feel complete without the DLC?
Yeah. And this is the thing. But also, the DLC that I've played of Resi, I don't think that doesn't fit into the game.
Well, Dale raised a really good point last week, which was the bedroom DLC fits within the story. Like, it accentuates the story, but it would destroy the pace of the main game.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm definitely on the fence here, because this week they announced the first ever Zelda season pass.
Yeah.
And whilst the second drop, like this Christmas, has an additional story and stuff, which I'm super excited for, and that is a way to keep me wanting to play Zelda. The first one has an extra trial and a hard mode.
How much is that?
And it's like, it's 18 quid for both drops.
And that's not
a hard mode should be in your game.
Yeah.
If you want, if you're going to make one, that should be inside the game. Like, Zelda, I will never play the hard mode. Don't get me wrong. I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's an insane thing to me to make people pay for.
I think we're all on the same page with it then. That, you know, if it feels.
It's a question of value.
It's a question of value, and it's a question of is this genuinely something extra? Is this genuinely extra downloadable content that supplements the experience in a better way, but you could play the main campaign?
I do think the timing of the Resi stuff is just a bad look.
But also, I don't
care that they've made it that way.
Why are they bringing it out so quickly?
A week.
Well, you know, someone else
a couple of months, man.
Did write in this week, and we've not read out their email, but, you know, they said, oh, you know, I'm okay with it, because they were like, it makes sense. The Resident Evil game, they're like, it's fresh in my mind at the moment. I've just completed the campaign. I'm kind of itching for more, and then the DLC drops, and so they're very much happy with it.
It's a good point.
It is also worth pointing out, like, the cost of making a AAA game, £60 like, if it doesn't sell enough, is not enough to cover the cost of a game. No, that's why people make DLC.
How much is the DLC?
I actually don't know with Resi.
Yeah.
I think it's about 20 quid.
For all of it?
For all of it.
For season pass?
Yeah, I think so. So you're paying 80 quid overall.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money to spend on one game.
But do you want... And I'm not saying I know this for sure, but like, do you want more Resident Evil? They have to make themselves financially solvent. And it sounds like they have. Like, sounds like they've done well. So that's great. But I think it's kind of mad.
I've liked the DLC so far. I think they're missing a trick by... not doing more. They could be doing more with it, I think.
Well, so the thing they're doing, and I won't say what it is because it's a story spoiler, but they've got these two bits of supplementary, like, separate stuff. Yeah. Some of it's comedy, some of it's different modes, some of it's, like, extra tapes. But in, I think it's a month or maybe 2 months, they're releasing free DLC, which is extra story.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, the idea of going, you can pay for the stuff that doesn't necessarily fit, but if you love our world, there's more there.
That's pretty good.
And then here's a free extra story episode for everyone who buys the game.
No, that's pretty good.
I think that's quite a nice way of going about it. Yeah. But then there's stuff like Ubisoft have said, for now, they're never charging for more story DLC. They're only charging for cosmetics now, which I think is fantastic. Like,
that's really good.
You pay, if you love a game, you pay for the extra stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the same way we pay for things in Overwatch, although albeit not through loot boxes.
Different, though.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
But it's the same.
But the thing, if Overwatch was like just three quid for the skin that you want, I would do that.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I'm surprised they haven't already instituted being able to pay for the currency, and I think they probably will.
Yeah,
because the furore over loot boxes is getting so big now.
Yeah,
that I can't see them not changing at some point and saying, "Look, you can buy coins."
Yeah.
And just have what you want.
Why have a currency? That's the thing. Like, why have a currency in there anyway? Like, if it's not going to be, like, you're going to be able to buy it.
Well, exactly.
Later on,
I mean, it is just a way of making you buy more loot boxes, transparently. Yeah. Like, of all the things we love about Overwatch, that is a shitty decision.
Or
like,
even,
really unpleasant thing to do to people.
Or even have some kind of trading system.
Yep.
Like, I think a trading system would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd
be
really genuinely cool. Have been times when we've bought 20 loot boxes each in the office when there's been an event, and Joe's got, like, the skin that I
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it happens.
But he's
all
like, not
the time.
Because he doesn't play that character.
Yeah. I've got like so many amazing Reaper skins. I'll never play that guy.
Reaper.
Like,
I've got more skins for Reaper than anyone else.
I know. It's
never,
weird,
never play.
But like, but like Al and
Rory,
like Krupa and like Rory, like play as Reaper. So it's just like, I'll give you these.
Yeah.
Like, you can have them. Yeah. Give me all that junk crap, bro. All right. Last bit of feedback. From Darren Gutteridge, and it's titled Old Women and Cinemas. So we teased this at the top
for whatever reason.
So it better be fucking good, Darren. Following on for the email you received last week,
there was an old woman that grappled another old woman in a cinema.
Yeah.
About the two old women grappling in a cinema.
A walking stick was involved.
Mm. Shit. I can confirm that old women are the worst cinema customers out there. Come on, mate. After working on a cinema food counter for 6 years, I think they know that they are untouchable because no one could get angry at someone's nan, so they push the boundaries.
That's true.
That is quite true.
If you were an old woman, you'd be a fucking nightmare, Gav.
Untouchable. The best evidence I have to support this happened during a screening of Star Trek Into Darkness during the day, when OAPs could get a discount. About 20 minutes into the screening, people started filling out as two managers ran in. I presumed it was a problem with the projector, but no sooner the screen cleared out than an elderly lady in her 70s came over and said, "I want a free coffee for this." It isn't uncommon for us to give OAPs a free drink, and that does happen. Like in Picture House cinemas, there's like OAP screenings,
right?
And at the front of the screening is free tea, coffee, and biscuits.
Oh, nice. What?
Like I found this.
Have you been into an OAP screening?
When I work from
dying your beer white.
When I work from home, like I used to go to them because like they let other people in as well.
Yeah.
But they're designated OAP screening. So when you go in, there's free tea and coffee.
That's so nice.
But yeah,
they chatter during films. You would have gone mental. Surely.
Oh, I sat next to. I can't remember what film I went to see, but I sat next to this woman because it was quite full. Oh no, I think she came and sat by me. Mm. But it was like this old redhead lady who was like 55, and I was like,
that's not old.
But like she was like 55, like that.
It's
she's
not an
older lady. I didn't say OAP. I said she was an old woman.
Did you specify redhead because that turns you on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like
okay, cool.
40-year-old redheads is like absolutely.
That's your target market.
Yeah. And she had like the dirtiest smoker's laugh ever. It was just like it was the hottest thing ever. Anyway, it isn't uncommon for us to give OAPs a free drink. So
that
I reluctantly.
The crux of that tangent.
I was not expecting it to end there.
So I reluctantly made her one. But when I returned, she also said she wanted free tickets. To get at the head of the curve, I went in search of them in the back offices. But I'm just trying to figure out why they cleared out.
What?
Okay, right, here we go. I couldn't find our roll of free tickets after about 10 minutes, so I went back out into the foyer. The old lady got angry, but as she was telling me she was thinking of going to another cinema after this inconvenience, I looked up to see a gurney being wheeled out the screen with a cloth over it behind her. Turns out someone had died in the screen. Letting out a death rattle and everything. And
while Into I was in Darkness the is a bad film, to be fair.
And while I was in the offices looking for tickets, an ambulance turned up. The old lady then charged straight at the manager, who was clearly upset having just left the screen where a man died, and asked him for the free tickets. My manager gave it, "Are you a kidding me?" look, and stormed past her. The old woman loudly declared she was never coming back here and left. Good riddance to you, my guy. Keep up the good work of spreading bad cinema stories. I don't think that happened.
You don't think anything happened. Into Darkness is a film centered around someone dying and coming back to life.
Yeah.
Can you imagine
getting halfway through?
Can you imagine dying, your last moments on Earth, a Star Trek
listening
into
to Carl Urban's southern accent?
I kind of feel like if that had happened, it would have been in the news.
No way.
No.
I know someone dying in the middle of Star
someone
Trek Into Darkness.
Someone dying in an OMP die all over the place. Cinema.
I guess they already had that Anton Yelchin die. So
that's the most.
Too much death associated with this film.
That's the most.
Bury it.
That totally
that's the most
the
provincial
news.
Welsh thing you've ever said. Yes. Someone died in a cinema. That had to be in the
in
news.
The news.
Yeah, that's bad cinema stories. There we go. Yeah, so people keep sending your bad cinema stories. IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com or anything else you want to send in. Funny stuff. We have 3 good emails here. One of them might be a lie. But there we are. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.